There's always a tension between what consumers want and what brands want. As hyperbolic as it sounds, it's never been harder to be a consumer. So in this process, what the brands want and what the consumers might want, they might not match. So in the process, brands might end up doing something they shouldn't be doing, which might not always work out well for the consumers. This problem becomes a little complicated, especially with everything being online. Such things might happen intentionally or unintentionally. And it's also sometimes not easy for brands, people building products, designing products, to be cognizant of all the factors that might impact the consumer. And as the world has moved online, as all our interactions have moved online, this tension has become a little problematic. And one of the side effects of this tension is that this so-called dark patterns have become a big problem. Across the world, various consumer regulators have taken cognizance of this fact, and they are passing regulations on how to protect consumers. Recently, the government of India released draft guidelines on regulating these dark patterns, and that's the topic of today's conversation. So I have Kailash, who heads technology at Zerodha, and Ashish, who's the head of policy at NASSCOM, to talk about this. So before we dive into this, Kay, I'll start with you. So what, in the simplest possible terms, what exactly are dark patterns, and maybe a little bit of history on how this became a thing?
Dark patterns, the word itself is rather new. I think just about a decade old. But in really simple terms, when, and it's a user interface, digital surface term, when a user interface employs trickery and tricks users into doing something that they didn't really have the intention to do, that's a dark pattern. I can give you a really simple example. On many websites, we've seen, let's say, giant button that says download PDF. But that in itself is an ad. But there's a tiny link below that button that says download the PDF here. So that's a classic, simple, widespread dark pattern. And the goal there of the entity that employs a dark pattern is to get users to click on the ad, which the user never had the intention to. There are many variations. And historically, it's not really a new thing. I think it has been there from the advent of the internet. Even in the dial-up era, for those who remember, we had pop-ups, and there was this entire pop-up menace, and I think
Microsoft internet bars.
Yeah, toolbars. I mean, so dark patterns, I guess, were malicious back in the day. The pop-up menace drove some of the biggest browser innovations of that era, you know, pop-up blocking, etc. But today, what has changed, what has shifted, is that so-called dark patterns have been legitimized by large organizations who employ it as a part of their business. So in the dial-up, in the old internet era, things that were seen as a menace today have become industry standard practices. So that is the transition that dark patterns as a thing has undergone over the last 20 or 25 years.
Ashish, so the government has come out with a consultation paper on regulating this. Like, where is the government coming from? In the sense, is this a reaction to a lot of other governments? Let's say, for example, the US FTC has been taking a particularly strong stance against this. Is this a reaction to the global move to regulate this, or has this been part of the government's agenda for a very long time?
So I think if you go back to the current draft, which is under consultation, the conversation around this began somewhere in June this year. And it actually started with the ASCII, which is the Advertising Standard Council of India, looking at dark patterns from the context of just advertising, right? And they came up with four kind of dark patterns, which they felt were as part of the advertising services, like drip pricing, bait and switch, false urgency, and also sometimes you have disguised advertising, which is really, you know, creating organic content and treating the advertising to be like an organic content. Now, there are a lot of things which can't be covered under the advertising itself. And that was the discussion which was happening between the Consumer Affairs Ministry and the ASCII. And to be honest, I think increasingly when you look at the Indian consumer class over the last decade, so much of what was happening offline is today happening online, right? I mean, if you just take financial services, you take a simple example of personal loans. This is something has always been an issue in terms of, you know, the rates, the repayment capability, and the collection practices, and so on and so forth. And there is an entire issue around it, which has now in a way shifted or is increasingly shifting from an offline world to an online world. So what would be the kind of dark patterns here in terms of saying that, okay, you will cause deception by not letting the potential customer understand what the rate actually implies in terms of cost, right? So that could be something, or giving him a very cheap deal, saying 8% interest rate, no security, and he clicks, and then finally ends up with 36% interest rates with 10 big terms and conditions. So that is bait and switch strategy. So I think from a government point of view, in the Consumer Protection Act, you have the concept of unfair trade practice. So all of this comes under unfair trade practice. Now, the problem is that because in India, you haven't gotten evidence of saying that over the last 5 years, this is the set of complaints in the digital world, which relates to some of the examples which we discussed in terms of dark patterns. I think the government decided that let's look at what is globally established as some dark patterns, right? So they looked at a list of 10, and that's where the thought process started. And I think for good measure, they set up a task force, which involved civil society groups, law firms, industry associations like NASSCOM, and they asked for recommendations. And I think the first step was to say that, okay, let's identify something and let's put it out as a voluntary poll. And that, in a way, could have been a good thing, you know, to start off. But I think the government took a next step already by saying that we will actually put this into a draft set of guidelines. And that's under consultation today. And we can talk a lot about this. Now the thing is that some of the things which are dark patterns are otherwise not illegitimate activities. Right? So I think, so that's where we will have friction at times to think about. And another interesting aspect, which I think nobody talks about, is that sometimes the service provider could just be not putting the right kind of investment in the processes, and it could actually be resulting in some inefficiencies or incompetencies as an organization. And from a customer point of view, it may not be very easy to understand that is it a dark pattern or is it just that the service levels in certain manner are completely, you know, not as per service standard. A simple example of this is that access to helpline. So if you don't put up capacities, that's just a business thing which you're not able to do. But sometimes you have the resources and you have just made it difficult for the consumer to access the helpline, then that's a dark pattern. But sometimes it's difficult. So, and I'll end with this, sometimes in a public sector banking environment, you could go through many hoops. And you might wonder, is it because the actual bank is trying to avoid you to get to that level? Or it could just be bad UI. So I think these are some of the things which we haven't tested out in terms of really, you know, figuring out. So it's a gray road ahead, but I think it's a good start to be talking about it. And definitely when we start talking about it, companies will realize that there are certain things which are must avoid. And that would be a good big thing, yeah.
We'll dive deep into the regulations, but before that, we are supposed to be the most smartest creatures in the universe. Like, is that a sad review of humanity that we can be tricked with a bad UI or a UX? Like, I want to get both your reactions on this.
It's a dark pattern, and these dark patterns, and not coincidentally, are always employed in the context of financial gains. It's not... Without wherever there's no money or financial transaction, you typically do not tend to see a so-called dark pattern, right? And I think that's then explained by a simple matter of incentives. If there's a financial incentive, if there's a financial gain to be made by increasing the size of a certain kind of button and reducing the size of another kind of button, that seems like an obvious incentive to a lot of organizations whose primary incentive is to make money. So it is, dark patterns are nothing new. It's just a more digital manifestation of the same incentive-driven human behavior. And is there a sad commentary on humanity? Yes, obviously.
Ashish, is humanity doomed?
So, see, what has happened? In an offline world, you are in a proper 3D environment. You know, your senses are assessing everything. Then you move to a laptop world where, okay, you have a screen in front of you. And now you are on this mobile. So, and a consumer is always in a rush. So, let's click and go ahead. So, in that kind of an environment, I think a dark pattern has a serious implication because probably I'm walking, I'm also doing some purchase, I'm browsing, and then little things can make a lot of difference. The kind of colors you use, the font you use, how you do some of these things. And really, the core thing is that when the intent is to misdirect and deceive, I think, so because you will never get it to a sense of a prescriptive list of what all is a dark pattern list. But I think as soon as you put this test of intent to deceive and mislead, I think it's very much happening, however smart you are. I think forget dark patterns. I think some of the smartest people have got conned into financial frauds and money siphoned off and so on and so forth. So I think it's very real. And it's something that consumers need to understand and companies need to know when there is a dark pattern actually.
Dutch social psychologist once said that the human conscious brain has the capacity of an abacus. And at any given point of time, there's very little that we can focus on, in the sense it's barely one thing. But on the regulation side, now that you've seen it, what are your views on the enforceability of the regulation? Because earlier you alluded to a lot of conflicts, a lot of issues, especially, for example, if you assume anything, if you open a PSU website, it's the entire website is a dark pattern. But as you alluded to, it's not intentional. Sometimes it might be just because they haven't made the right investment or so on and so forth. So in terms of the overall structure of the consultation so far, would this go far enough to address the issues, or would this just end up creating more conflicts and gray and fuzzy areas where the industry and government will just have a lot of conflict?
So I think enforcement is still a little ahead of us. I don't think, even from a government perspective, at least in my conversation, we are necessarily seeing it as an enforcement step at this point in time. I think what is important is to establish certain common understanding of what is a dark pattern. And I think that's the first step which this guidelines are seeking to do. And in the entire consultation process, the feedback, at least from industry, was that, you know, use the lens of the effect of a pattern. So or the intent behind the pattern. So, and that is something that needs to be eventually established to actually, treat it as an unfair trade practice under the Consumer Protection Act. And that's still ahead of us, that how will that actually happen? Take the case of, just take a simple example. There is no regulation and there is some regulation. So when there is no regulation, so for example, we went and asked the Consumer Affairs Ministry, why don't we use the past data of consumer complaints and pick out those complaints which had certain patterns, and you can take out the top 10 patterns and you can use that as a basis to say that now we want to have a guideline for these patterns, because these are something we have observed in India. So government has no data practically to do that evidence-based policy making. So I think with this step, we will probably, if after, let's say, a year or two, we can go back to the consumer helpline and get the data to say that, okay, what kind of complaints actually came in, and then reconcile that with the regulations and move forward. I think it's going to be a journey. And from an industry point of view, I think there is a lot more at stake than just enforcement. It is a matter of reputation. So I think today enforcement happens in many, many different ways. So as a consumer, if I go on social media and start complaining about a particular dark pattern, I think it's already a signal in a manner which a lot of firms would seriously want to avoid. So I think there are many ways beyond just hard enforcement where there are carrots and sticks which will work in this journey to make sure that, you know, we start building a digital ecosystem where consumers are not misdirected. And it's going to be a tension for sure, as I think was initially mentioned. and we'll see how we'll navigate this.
I'd like to add to what Ashish said, and I agree with Ashish. The problem with enforcement here, and I'm speaking from a technologist lens, is that you can't ever have an exhaustive list of dark patterns. Even something as simple as like an important bit of information being on a small font size, there's no such thing as a small font size. Is it 10 pixels? Is it 12 pixels wide? What is the DPI of the screen? So you can't ever have a thing that says that using X pixel or rem, whatever font size on a web page is dark or not. That's not possible. So I think this can't really be looked at from an enforcement lens in that sense. It has to be, the way I see it, the way I understand it, it has to give consumers a leg to stand on. Where previously they have no leg, saying the font was too tiny, I couldn't read. And it could be a million different variations, a million different dark patterns. There should be some legal basis for consumers to pursue their right, saying that was really misleading. And right now, it would be very difficult without a legal basis, without a legal recognition of this concept of dark pattern. So that is the way I am looking at it, because any sort of individual exhaustive enforcement is technically infeasible or impossible.
I think this ties into the follow-up question I had for you. So some of the industry reactions were that there's already existing regulations which kind of cover most of these dark patterns. Was another regulation really needed, and does it maybe address some of the potential gaps in it?
The concept of unfair trade practice is a very broad concept.
Right.
And technically, I can go to the Consumer Protection Court and decide that, you know, this is, according to me as a consumer, this is an unfair trade practice. And obviously, you know, I can get a favorable judgment order. I can, company can get a order which can be cease and desist. I can even get compensation and so forth. Now, the point about these guidelines is that how do you start dealing with these things at scale? So when you think about it at scale, the amount of resources that get spent when you try to deal with complaints at an individual level, and the amount of state capacity you need to deal with it. And then when you start thinking of it from the lens of consumer and company or industry, the consumer will be at a disadvantage because at a firm level, you will always have the firepower, the money muscle to say that, okay, let's handle this, let's take it to the legal process and let's see what happens. So what that creates is a potentially an environment where a consumer usually will do his own cost-benefit analysis and say that it's not worth getting into, and probably shift the vendor, shift the service provider, and whatever it is. Now, from that point of view, I think you do need a set of regulations. Now, having said that, I think the challenge is that do you want to look at it as a hard-coded regulation, or you want to have the journey which starts with a voluntary code? So I think that's the first point of, I would say, debate in this legal journey. And when you actually go through a hard-coded regulation, how is it going to play out? That will depend upon the lens through which the Consumer Affairs Ministry will treat these complaints. So, and who are the people who are going to sit on these complaints? So I could be very pedantic, like, you know, the example of font somebody mentioned, and you just mentioned it, right? So if I could then say that, okay, anything below font 9 is tiny, then that sets a very bad precedent in many ways.
Yep.
And we want to avoid this. So how do you get industry voice into some of the capacity building within the government to say that, you know, why a company thinks this is a genuine practice? I think that discussion needs to happen. So and what we are trying to therefore see is that in this process of regulation building, we can get into a forum format where there can be a lot of conversation and learning and feedback so that this regulation can actually evolve into something very useful and sensible. So from that point of view, I don't think it is an overlap or an unnecessary set of regulation. It is a good beginning. We just need to work on it because it's very nuanced. It's not a typical black and white scenario where you say that, okay, you jumped a red signal and you pay a fine. So that's not what this is about.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay, you've been thinking about this for a long time. It's this idea of, you know, doing right for the users is also core to Zerodha's philosophy. You've written a post called User Disengagement, which is probably should be like a Bible for people working in technology and people who are not just designing products, but also taking business decisions. I'll ask you about the post, but before that, how has your own views about quote-unquote doing right thing for the users evolved over time? Because you've been tinkering pretty much for your entire life with technology. Like, how has your worldview about user interactions evolved?
So I think early, I was on the early internet. I think I got online in the year 2000. So I got to see that shift from the dial-up internet to slightly faster internet, Web 2.0, 3.0. And I saw how dark patterns evolved. And I'd realized at my, I was a pre-teenager then. So some of the things that I employed on the web pages that I was building on the piece, you know, software that I was building and distributing, those were dark patterns. I didn't even realize, and I was way too young to realize. But when it really started happening to me as I grew older, you know, early 2000s, when you'd go on a website and there'd be 20 pop-ups that open up, and that was very annoying and that was bad. And so common sense would dictate that this is really bad. I hate it. So I shouldn't do that in the software that I make. So to me, it has been really understanding that has evolved via common sense. And as makers of software, technology, user interfaces, we're also consumers and users. I use software written by other people every day, built by other companies every day. And people use software that I've written and our organization has built, right? So the common sense understanding translates really well. If you don't want to be annoyed, if you find some of these practices deceptive or annoying, how could you, in the right conscience, employ those same practices in your line of work? So to me, it's that simple common sense principle. I find it really bad, so I won't do it. I wouldn't want it to be happening to others either.
In the post, you mentioned this truism, don't do unto others what you wouldn't want to be done unto you.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned common sense. It should seem like common sense, but it's not. I mean, this problem is just getting worse by the day, so much so that we have regulations. Like, if you were to put on your technologist hat and think of yourself as a person building or designing products, like, why do you think this still exists in the 21st century? Are people going wrong?
No, it's not going wrong. Right. To the people who employ dark patterns, to the organizations and entities who do it, it's going right.
Right.
It generates revenue. And many of these decisions are based on practices like A-B testing. You do a big red button, then you do a slightly orange button mixed with text. You try out variations, measure the conversion rates over a period of time, and whatever works best, you do it. So when a lot of such decisions are based entirely on so-called A-B testing, where those metrics, did it generate revenue, did it convert revenue, those drive user interface, product, UX decisions, then it's very natural that we'll slowly creep into the lowest common denominator of practices, which is whatever generates money. And deceptive practices can easily, I mean, I had no intention of clicking on an ad, but the UI deceives me into clicking an ad. Obviously, that will make money. And the A-B testing systems will register that pattern as a better converting pattern. So this whole practice of, I'm not saying A-B testing as a concept is inherently bad. Of course, it's not. But A-B testing and purely metric conversion driven practices for building technology for human beings has taken off like nobody's business in the last two decades. And we are seeing the results of that. There's entire machinery. There are entire industries that cater to delivering metric-based business decisions.
Everything is a hack, no?
Everything is a number. But really, I mean, human-computer interaction, HCI, is a field. It's a scientific field that has existed. And you mentioned early that you read somewhere that human beings can only store X number of things in their working memory. It's true. It's very well understood. I think that number, rule of thumb is 7 plus or minus 2. So even on a user interface, if you have 15 items in the menu, the user is already lost. So there are even quantifiable metrics to user attention. And this is slightly from a philosophical tangent, not really from an incentive perspective. We have limited attention. And there are even terms like attention economy now, robbing of attention. So there's a reason why these terms have surfaced, right? You go online and every website that you see, every app that you see, everything is trying to show you an ad. Everything is trying to deceive you into clicking something that you shouldn't have clicked. Everything is trying to monetize you. Even Wikipedia, for instance, is a non-profit, and it has
donate
been
banner.
Yeah, the donate banner. I mean, it's such a shame that Wikipedia, showing a banner soliciting donations is okay, but the language they use okay. is very problematic. I think that's a dark pattern. That's a non-profit. So it has really become the norm. And from a philosophical angle, I think it's a bit of a crime also. I know it sounds a bit like hyperbole, but unless I'm not consenting to my attention being stolen, to being misled into clicking stuff, to being misled into accidentally clicking a tiny checkbox that starts a subscription, etc., etc. How's all of this legitimate globally as a practice, right? When trillion-dollar corporations employ these practices, there's a problem. And I agree with everything Ashish has said, except for one tiny disagreement. I think if reputation as a thing, you know, somebody gets tricked by a dark pattern and they air their complaint on social media, if that really had an effect, I don't think this would have exploded so much. I think reputation as a self-correcting mechanism that forces companies into reducing dark patterns is not very effective. It may be effective, but not very effective, because if it was, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
So this is for both of you. 2023, we are in a place where, okay, like you rightly said, this dehumanizing language of everything being an eyeball, everything being an interaction, everything being engagement, have people building products and designing products lost the plot, in the sense that they've let these measures become the target and everything else has taken a backseat? So to give one simple example, it's become a default thing that a user visiting an application again and again is a good thing. Like if I look at it from the finance industry, it's absolutely the bad thing. Like activity and results are inversely proportional in finance. Is like, where do we go from? Is there going back to, like you rightly said, common sense based design of products, policies, and how people think about business decisions? I'll start with you.
So I think this is also, we are in a very nascent stage still. All the internet economy, everything getting digitized, this phenomenon is just about a decade old, really, at scale, right? So I think this is really the early years of heavy civilizational digitization. And I think it's common sense again. How many with your limited attention, how many apps or websites on a daily basis can capture that, right? That'll also have a tipping point. And I think this stuff will correct itself, because it's not sustainable, it's not viable, it's not healthy for any society anywhere. So I think over a period of time, for whatever reason, it will start correcting itself. This exploitation of eyeballs, you've seen how low these have fallen, right? Whatever used to work has stopped working. Yeah. Now that's why we have more and more darker and darker patterns. There'll be a tipping point where this stuff stops becoming effective and people will just get sick of being, dark patterned all the time. So I think it'll correct over a period of time. It has to, logically. That's my view. Ashish.
I completely agree, Kailash. And to your earlier comment also, I think what I meant to say is that along with the regulation, then the power of consumer to stand up increases. And that will probably, have a greater reputational risk at some level. And you're right, I think things are happening at such a scale, but we are still very early in this process. And one another way to maybe explain this is that a lot of the actions from industry, in some sense, are very clunky. So let's take advertising. It's like spray and pray, right? So if I've got really targeted ad, which was very useful for me, I wouldn't think of it as a spam. But because I get ads which are not relevant, and I get only 5% ad maybe which are relevant, I start worrying about it, and then I start thinking about spam and all of that stuff. Right? And because of this clunkiness in various processes, where it is also about customer targeting, customer retention, and then you are trying to make up for lack of, at times, genuine understanding of consumer or genuine quality, or you are trying to make up for lack of processes at your end to employ certain things which are unethical and or deceptive to still meet your business outcomes. And that's what is dark pattern in some sense. So I think as we mature as business and industry, and as we are able to refine our processes and technologies better, both from a consumer point of view and from an industry point of view, and this is the positive lens, right? This is the best case scenario which I'm painting. Then I think both from an industry and from a consumer, we'll have to worry less and less about dark pattern. And that's the choice we have to make. We can make it early. But as historically is visible, it is not a choice which will organically happen by itself. So you need that push of the government to come up with the regulation. Couple of examples. On a cigarette packet, you have smoking kills. So obviously you can buy a cigarette and there's a clear advisory on it, it kills. So it's a nudge that somebody who's buying, maybe he needs to avoid buying it, right? But he still makes a choice. He's an adult, he can make that choice. So there are certain things which government will come out and say that certain things will be labeled in a certain manner so that at least customer has a head start. There are other things beyond the dark patterns which we are discussing today. And this is especially relevant, let's say, in the case of children. So today, if you're again using your phone, then you open any of the social media sites. And once you start scrolling, you will not stop scrolling. The next video will start, the next thing will start, the next reel will start. And maybe as an adult, it's okay. I mean, an adult has to take a decision. But for a child, this could be something maybe a child is not able to take a decision and it could have some detrimental impact on child's understanding and the way he utilizes his time. Now, do we need regulation for that? It's an open question. And now, if you just look at the sphere of regulation, we are talking it from the lens of just consumer protection. We recently had the Data Protection Act come in. And that talks about, processing of children has to be done in such a manner that it is not detrimental to the well-being of a child. Now, what that means. So today, we might be looking at certain set of patterns which nobody has categorized as a dark pattern or otherwise. But going down, when you start looking at personal data processing, it could very well be that certain practices will start popping up as dark patterns. I have sent you a newsletter. I have taken your consent. Now the unsubscribe button is hidden somewhere. So yeah. Is it that the law requires that in the manner I gave my consent, it should be equally easy to withdraw the consent. Now, if you employ tactics which as a business, you feel that, okay, I will reduce the unsubscription scenario, then it could easily be something that can be clamped upon. So I think when you look at the sphere of regulation, it is not going to be limited to consumer protection law. It could have many, many such things. And this is something that from a business point of view, you need to take a call pretty early that how are you going to measure success? How are you going to be talking to your investors? Who are your investors and what are their metrics? So clearly, I think if that Excel sheet that you are looking at has problems in terms of the targets, then to the point that the measure is the problem, right? In some sense, that will happen. I think and that clarity is going to be important. And I don't think there is a lot of discussion which probably happens at an early stage in a startup on these points, because clearly the focus is on raising fundings, getting more customers, and then sometimes it becomes too late. So to then do this deep dive back into the practices. And this is something which is an interesting discussion, I think, from our startup world point of view.
Kay mentioned there's a problem of, like, if businesses don't see results, which means there'll be darker patterns. Now, if you were to put your policy hat, and if you were to invert whatever you said, and give advice to founders and decision makers on what not to do whenever they're making business decisions or deciding on metrics on what to chase, what not to chase, like, what would your ideal case advice be? Like, what are those key points that people should keep in mind when they are making business decisions?
So, see, before I was in NASCOM, and one big part of my life I spent enabling low-income workers to save for old age. So I spent about a decade creating a business, right? We had about 1 million customers. And this is people saving for their social security. Now, the thing about social security is that if you open a pension account, nothing happens because just opened an account. You need to accumulate in that account enough to be able to have something for your old age. So if the metric is opening of accounts, and that's what everybody's chasing, then I think you will employ a lot of practices which will get you a million or 10 million accounts. But if the metric is that after 5 years, have the average account holder saved X proportion of his monthly income, if that is the metric that you are chasing, then all your patterns will be focused on delivering on that kind of a metric. As against this, it's simpler in insurance in some sense. You bought insurance, you are covered. So from that point of view, just making a difference between pension and insurance, right? So, but if you, as a company, you also want to bundle pension and insurance. So how do you think about that? So a lot of this is, it starts from product design. It starts and it kind of anchors into the outcomes that you are chasing. And are those outcomes short-term outcomes in some sense, or these are meaningful outcomes for the end consumer? If you focus on the meaningful outcomes for the end consumer, you will, even if you employ patterns, these will be positive nudges most likely, and not nudges which are out to deceive you as a consumer. So I don't have very strong advice, but this is just something which I can bring back from my experience from past.
Okay, sorry, I interrupted you before.
I wanted to share something else, but adding to what Ashish said, it really comes down to metrics. Again, the philosophy of running an organization. Imagine as an organization that opens accounts. If account closure is a metric for poor performance and there's an easy way to close accounts and people are closing it, then imagine you have a product manager whose sole focus is reducing account closure. Then the simplest thing to do is make account closure difficult, and the graph suddenly goes down. Account closures have gone down and business has improved, right? So this whole metric-based view of anything is problematic. It could be the right metric to begin with, but metrics, they don't exist in isolation, especially in complex businesses and services. A lot of metrics really have to play together, and you have to look at everything together and not in isolation to make meaningful decisions. So ideally, one should never really never have a goal of reducing account closure. It should be increasing customer satisfaction. It's common sense, but yeah. And secondly, on the regulation bit earlier, I wanted to cite this example of what has now become widespread. You go to any web page in the world, there's a pop-up that shows up. You know, the notorious cookie consent pop-up. So when that whole consent thing came out in GDPR, it had the right intent. You should get explicit consent from users to set up a cookie or collect information and whatnot. But the implementation has turned out to be a annoying UX nightmare, which right, and it fatigues users. Now you go to any web page, you don't want to read all that stuff, and you're conditioned to just hitting OK. And most websites don't even have a reject button; it's OK or advanced settings or whatever. And people are so fatigued of dealing with this one particular cookie consent pop-up that people just hit OK. Now what's happened here is that, because now people have fatigued and they hit OK, now the website has received legally compliant, legitimate consent to do whatever. But that's how the pop-up thing has backfired. So when it comes to regulations and implementation, I think being overly prescriptive is very problematic. Like Ashish said, right? This is specifically, this stuff, dark pattern stuff, is extremely nuanced. It should be, any sort of regulation should be principle-based. Anything that says sure pop-up or reduce font size will just backfire and make it worse. So I wanted to share that example earlier.
So on that note, because you actually build stuff, you actually design stuff, in the sense that, like, when you're thinking about product design, is the lens that something you would want to use, or how do you think about, what's your framework when you're designing product? Like, how do you, let's say you had to start from scratch, what goes on in your mind when you're thinking about the design choices, like, be it anything?
I think there's a huge element of what personally I would expect out of a common sense user interface. And I would expect least amount of pain. I would expect least amount of deception. I mean, I would expect zero deception, right? If I'm using a piece of technology, I want it to be simple and I want it to be free of clutter, free of deception. So that is my framework, whether it be an open source, free and open source project, whether it be one of our commercial things, that is really the lens that I personally use and the lens that our teams have looking at a product. So users and the common sense tangible philosophy here is to be user-centric and not really be business-centric. Now that sounds ironic, but if you're user-centric and if your business vision is aligned that way, it must pay off. Like we can take ourselves as an example. So that's the view. Make it as simple for the user. And if the users are happy with your product, then the business outcomes should ideally logically follow.
Ashish, so you mentioned something interesting, which was actually one question I had, the example of pensions. So is there an element where this regulations or rather dark patterns, is there like a element of 50 shades of gray? Because let's take that example of the US example where they automatically opted out a lot of employees into their pension programs. Now, if you look at it in isolation, that can potentially be construed as a dark pattern. But if you're looking at yourself from the lens of, let's say, a policymaker or a regulator, getting people enrolled into pension programs is actually good. So is there an element of context dependency on a lot of these regulations? Because when you say, if you say opting in is bad, like a blanket statement, that could potentially backfire and that could potentially lead to a consumer welfare loss. The same is the case with EPFO. In the absence of employers having to automatically contribute to a lot of these users, I mean, no user would have, and we would probably have a lot few savers than otherwise. Like, is there a solution to this?
So in the pension world, it is very clear globally that opt-in is not going to work. And opt-out is a good option. It has been discussed across jurisdictions and it is accepted in as a practice. And obviously, it has to be transparently designed as a clear policy. So in a lot of these things where there is a potential for something to be treated as a dark pattern, but it's actually a good nudge, I think it does get a regulatory cover. So it might start out as a practice, but it gets picked up and it gets a regulatory cover, and then and that's a good thing going, right? Another thing which is very interesting, I think, which we should see is that we talked about regulation, but technology is not only going to lead to more dark patterns and more activity, it can actually be a solution also. So so one of the things which potentially is in the realm of a dark pattern is that once you have a subscription, which is like a monthly or whatever, and you want to cancel that subscription, you just can't find the cancel button, right? It's just like difficult. And sometimes these are tiny subscriptions, 100 rupees, 200. So you don't want to bother about it, but it's there. So now what RBI has done is that it's come up with this concept of account aggregator, right? And it has come up with this concept of saying that all of your consent through this tokenization framework and all of that is managed in such a way that in my mobile, through my bank, I can manage a lot of my standing instructions which I've given to various service providers. And through swipes on my one app, I can enable and disable. So sometimes what is a way of resolving certain activities which are dark pattern, there can be multiple ways of looking at it. So we should also look at technological solutions which will empower consumers more. And in that context, what the Data Protection Act is doing is that it is uniquely an Indian solution in the law itself, saying that we have a concept of a consent manager, which basically means that, okay, fine, I might have consented to 100 things when I was not having the time or not reading the fine print, and there might have been deceptive practices. But eventually, I will be, if I opted for a use of a consent manager, I can go back and on one fine afternoon, I'm scrolling through all the consents which I've given, and I can remove the consents which I don't want. So I think technology is going to be a huge thing. And sometimes also the businesses, I think, take a shortcut. So it's always a shortcut when you're employing a dark pattern. So to Kailash's point, I think when it's a little more difficult to achieve the same outcome in a straight manner, And I think that's the choice a lot of time as heads of businesses that people like Kailash are taking to say that, you know, what is the route that we are going to take to achieve an outcome? And the lazy route is the dark pattern.
Okay, at a broad level, are these dark patterns the result of when people are designing products? Like, is it because they don't really understand how the human mind works, or thanks to behavioral economics, whatever, in the last 40 years, are we in a place where we understand the human brain so much that we have figured out how to hack, trick, delude users into doing whatever we want?
No, there's that classic cliche adage that, I forgot who said it, you know, goes like this. Some of the brightest minds in the world are figuring out ways to make people...
Facebook engineer.
Oh, yeah. So it's all of this put together. I think when some of these practices, dark patterns, they become industry standard practices, then it's legitimized. And to a young product engineer or a young technologist, it might not even look like a dark pattern. You look around and you see all large organizations, all competitors, all businesses employing the same pattern, then it's just a standard. It's convention. So it's a mix of all of this. It's a spectrum of overly focusing on metrics, you know, maximizing financial incentives, the lack of empathy, just misunderstanding, just everything becoming an accepted convention. It's everything put together.
As an extension to that, so there are bound to be a lot of programmers, product designers listening. Like, what advice would you give to them when they're thinking about designing products so that they don't go wrong? And also, in a lot of cases, developers might not have the choice to do what they want in a large organization because metrics would become the North Star. Is there anything they could do? Two questions. First, like, what would you want to tell the young programmers, young developers?
It's the same advice. It's not an advice specifically for engineers. It's don't do unto others stuff that you don't want unto you. That's it. I mean, you employ that rule of thumb, you will not be building dark patterns. Unless you want to be deceived, don't deceive others. And you're absolutely right. In most organizations globally, engineers have rarely a voice or a choice. Engineers have to build what have been asked of them to build. Now, we can dig deep and look at the ethical and moral conundrums of engineers choosing specific jobs, but at the end of the day, people have to make a living. It's just a tech job. And when a requirement comes through saying reduce the size of this button, they probably don't even have the context of why that button is being reduced. That metric would have been computed somewhere in some other department. So this has to be a collective thing. And this really is in the hands of business heads and decision makers, not really engineers.
So maybe if I can
just
add to that, you know, see, typically, let's say there are 10 businesses. Three of them are very good. They don't want to do dark patterns. And seven of them are little, okay, fine. We don't care so much. Now, for these three people, it becomes very difficult to stick to the idea of not doing a dark pattern. Because if there's no regulation and there's no action, then they're hoping in hell that, okay, the customers will be smart enough and will reward these three as against the seven. And this time frame may not, the timeline during which we are measuring this potential outcome could actually be a make and break for a startup. So from that point of view, what the regulation also does is that it creates a level field where it starts supporting the people who have good practices and then starts penalizing the people who thought they could get away. So I think that is one great thing from a regulation point of view, start seeing it like that and start championing some of the good practices. The second thing is that, let's say today, I don't know, but how many companies have, let's say, a person in their company who's actively looking at their product design and scouting for potential dark patterns and saying that, knock, knock, I want to ask you, this looks like a dark pattern, can we have a discussion? So I think as we start maturing, we'll start seeing these kind of things developing within the country in terms of, you know, industry taking up these practices and also documenting the choices. So when you do a design choice, I mean, is there enough documentation to say that we have thought about it from a dark pattern perspective or not? So I'm sure it is happening, but again, I'm also sure it's not really something which is a standard practice. So that culture I think will not just organically develop. It's like I said, it's a character instinct. And what we're hoping is that the good guys start getting rewarded and the bad guys start feeling some of the heat of this regulation. So I think that seems to be a good outcome if that can happen.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think killing peer pressure and FOMO, where you're pushed to employ some of this to be competitive, I think any sort of meaningful regulation flattening that is a great outcome. Yeah.
Got it.
Ashish, you mentioned two things I want to pick up on. So one, you use the example of loan apps, the interest rates, so on and so forth. And the other point you mentioned was it may never be possible to enforce this in the sense that there'll be far too many complaints at any given point of time. It's physically impossible for the government to go after pretty much everybody. But we are also seeing on the other end, for example, I can speak to financial scams. They've probably been never more scams than ever, especially the Chinese loan app scam, for example, which we were discussing in the office today morning. So if that is the case, like, the people who are doing all these things, they can actually not worry about getting into trouble and they can continue doing whatever they want, right? In the sense that, is it possible to make sure that such practices, put in a reasonable deterrent?
So see, under the Consumer Protection Act, for an example, government has a power to issue directions for cease and desist.
Right.
Now, this can be a very powerful tool. So imagine a mid-size or a large company receiving an order, which the government stands by, saying that you will cease and desist from doing ABCD. This could mean that operations could come to a halt. It could be a big thing. So, but it's not about that firm. So if the government has made a very recent order, it has demonstrated how it has, you know, looked at the particular case, and for example, it can levy a penalty up to 10 lakhs. And after that, it can even send people to jail, imprisonment, and so on and so forth. But the thing is that if it can be done in such a manner that it acts as a signal, it gives a clear message to others, people to do their maths and figure out that is it worth doing what they're doing? Because a lot of time what happens is that even, let's say, if a company gets penalized, the B to Z companies can't figure out the maths because they're either thinking that this is just random bad luck, so it's probability that this person got penalized, or they can't figure out the maths behind the penalty and the action. So then they can't do an analysis to say that, okay, fine, what is the likelihood of the same kind of penalty coming in a similar environment? So I think the signalable effect of some of the cease and desist and penal provision is what can have an industry-wide impact. But if you don't do that, if from that point of view, the actions are not giving that kind of signal, then I think we are just going to make some incremental progress. And it's going to be a bit of a cat and mouse, you know, and we'll continue to evolve, but incrementally. Yeah.
In this entire thing, so one area where there could be a potential tension is what the regulation says is a dark pattern. I might consider it as marketing. Like, is there, so to your mind, is there a line where something stops being marketing and something becoming a dark pattern?
That's a tricky one, because if we really truly scrutinize a lot of marketing, pretty much the entire concept of marketing may turn out to be a huge global dark pattern itself. So I don't have an answer, but being prescriptive, definitely, even with the best of intentions, it will not work. It can only backfire. But like Ashish said in the beginning, if you can establish intent of deception, that's a pretty good metric. And that construct as a legal framework has existed for centuries. So I think that sort of approach is what will probably work. And obviously, you can't fix and regulate everything. The long tail will always continue to employ all kinds of outright scammy patterns. Forget dark patterns. But the goal here is to at least, if you can at least get the big players in any industry to cut down on dark patterns, that's a huge win. That would be like 80-90% of all activity, right? And so I think the focus should be on that. But being prescriptive is firstly physically not possible, and it can't work, being overly prescriptive. Yeah.
Ashish, anything to add on that note?
No, I think Kailash, I completely agree with you. And from a government point of view, I think they need to bring more conversations onto the table. They need to bring industry and discuss some of their practices. And also, have this discussion with some of the consumer groups, so that there is sometimes, you know, if I'm just wearing an industry hat, I have to convince myself that this is absolutely a great pattern, because of the simple thing that every time I'm trying to convert a potentially unwilling customer, one could argue that it's a dark pattern, right? But that's the entire idea, that there are potential customers who want our product, and we go and make that pitch and we sell it to them eventually. So I think therefore there are going to be those zones here, but clearly it's not so great. There are clearly dark patterns which can be established in black and white.
Yep.
And therefore the focus should be on that and not muddle the discussion by focusing on the gray zone, at least not in this point in time in the journey. And because that in some sense itself is a sort of a deception, right? So I think if we can focus on the fact that let's identify what we agree as a dark pattern and let's solve for it. And let's not worry about stuff which is gray, at least in the short to medium term.
I agree.
Good. I have a slightly stupid question, so please bear with me. So does it seem like a philosophical thing in the sense that capitalism runs on more growth, more numbers, more metrics, more rivals, everything is more. Growth is good, less growth is bad. If you have more growth, you're rewarded with higher share prices, so on and so forth. So far in this conversation, one thing seems apparent, less is good. Does this mean capitalism has to break down for this thing to work, in the sense, this is not clearly tenable? I'll start with you, Kay, because this is also your favorite beating horse.
I mean, we are in the capital market, so it's a very difficult question to answer. But if you, and I don't want to break out into a commentary of different economic systems, the current state of civilization, very complex, and I don't have any answers. However, if we agree that a balanced approach is really is an optimum way to move forward. You need markets, you need free markets, you need the right kind of regulations for the right kind of industries. It can't be a wild, wild west. You can't overregulate. You can't not have any regulation. It will just become the wild, wild west. Then a balanced approach seems to be the only choice that we have, right, as humanity as a whole. And over the last hour, we've discussed ways to get to a balanced approach to tackle yet another problem that has come up, which is widespread dark pattern. So it's just that we have to take that balanced approach of balancing. It's a very fragile balancing act, and I don't see any other way forward.
Good.
Yeah.
Ashish, commentary on capitalism.
No, I think there are various ways of running a business, and there are various time horizons and various outlooks which various different people have. So I don't think there is one way of looking at it. I think it is what lets the founders sleep well at night. So I think and I think that's an important test. So whatever makes the founders sleep well at night, I think that's good for them, and then rest law will take care. And yeah, I think I'll just stop with that.
Got it. That was pretty much from my side. Any parting comments if both of you have on that note?
Nothing. I think this is, I was commenting the other day, typically technology regulations, be it wherever in India, outside India, any continent, tend to lack nuance, because we are basing our entire understanding of technology, how it has evolved over the last 10, 15 years practically, in making laws that are forward looking into the next several decades. And typically, it is done very poorly because we also don't really have the tech capacity or nuance within law and policy making circles. So every time I see a tech policy or regulation, you know, there are good things, but there are often tons of nuances that are missed. However, I was commenting the other day that this seems to be the first, you know, tech policy / regulation attempt where I tend to agree with it, the principle of it almost wholeheartedly. And the previous one was the Net Neutrality Act, you know, 2015-16. So after that, this has really personally made me very happy. It also, in its examination of dark patterns, it kind of nails it. Now, what remains to be seen is how it finally gets implemented, how it evolves. But the start is great. And as a technologist, it's one of those rare things where I kind of wholeheartedly agree with it.
Ashish?
So if you just look at our population and where we are, I think establishing digital trust is going to be the key thing which will really expand the size of this entire pie, right, in terms of what we look at the market. So if you zoom out of individual firm, I think what some of the things which are now happening in policy, whether it is the consumer protection rules and the dark patterns or the data protection law, and the reform of the IT Act in the form of a Digital India Act, we hope to see a structure which utilizes laws, technology, and kind of involves industry to kind of build that trust. And I think that if you zoom out of the specific issues with specific policy making, where you could grieve a lot like I do, but when I zoom out and look at all the last 10 years, what have we really got wrong at a big level, then there are just a few things I would think. And a large name, I think, would be we are directionally in the right space. So from that point of view, I think it's something that we need to support and we need to contribute, because left alone to the government, it will be difficult for them to deal with these nuanced topics. So like we talked about, right, millions of capable minds working in one direction. At least some of them need to also work in this direction. And if that starts happening, I think we are pretty much safe. Yeah.
Got it. This has been an absolute education for me. Thank you so much for taking the time, both of you. So we'll end with that.
Thank you. Thanks, Ashish.
Thank you. Yeah, good talk to you, Kailash. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.